Welcome to Now You Know. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today, I am speaking with animal advocate and politician Liz White, who is a founder of the Animal Alliance of Canada and the leader of the Animal Protection Party of Canada. Liz, so nice to speak with you today on the topic of where to acquire and where not to acquire pets. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good topic.
It is, isn't it? I wanted to start off just by asking, is it ever okay to buy a domesticated animal from a pet store?
Well, in my opinion, no. I would advocate that people don't go to pet stores to buy animals for a variety of different reasons. First of all, there's so many animals at shelters, towns, and humane societies in this country that going to a pet store will just deny an animal at a pound and a shelter from getting into a good home. But secondly, a lot of people go and buy purebred animals or mixed breed animals thinking that they are going to have sort of a better understanding of what kind of animal they're getting as opposed to an animal in a pound, when in fact, I think it's exactly the opposite. In many cases, you simply don't know how the animal was bred, where the animal was acquired from, how the animal came to be at a pet store. And in all the work that we did over the years of pet stores acquiring animals from breeders and puppy mills showed that animals often came from pretty grim circumstances. The parents of those animals were left in cages for long periods of time. And then the bunching and acquiring and delivering of very young puppies to pet stores often meant that they were physically compromised and, in fact, you know, caused greater problems for people who bought them than they would have had they gone to a pound or a shelter where somebody had taken some time to make sure that these animals were healthy, that they had their shots, that they were spayed and neutered and microchipped and so on and so forth.
What about certain pet stores such as PetSmart and I think PJ's Pets might do it, where they have these satellite adoption centers? So they essentially, I think what happens is animals from shelters, humane societies, et cetera, other rescue groups, bring their animals to those particular stores. Is that what's happening with those adoption programs? In those cases, is it okay to purchase a pet from a pet store?
Yes, and the stores are pretty clear about it. The animals are set off largely in a different area or caged differently. These are animals that come from Toronto Animal Services, for example, or the Ontario Humane Society, or a variety of different, and a number of smaller rescue groups are given the opportunity to bring cats and cats largely that need homes. And because of the high traffic in these stores, often they are able to get these animals adopted. In fact, Project Jesse, which is our small rescue group, we have two global pet food stores. And it's really a godsend to have those stores. But I think people can quite clearly see the difference in going into the pet store, the difference between acquiring a rescued animal that is in the pet store waiting for a home, a second home, as compared to what are often puppies that are there for people to, you know, fall in love with and pay lots of money and buy and take home without really knowing what they're getting.
And I think a big problem is that a lot of pet stores will tell customers that they acquire their purebred pets from proper breeders. Is that not the case? Is there a way to, you know, get some sort of proof of that if somebody is thinking that that's what they're doing?
This is always the challenge, right? Is what paperwork does the pet store have to give to somebody who acquires, say, a basset hound or, you know, puppy or a poodle puppy or whatever. And, you know, the pet stores sell these animals for a substantial amount of money. Before there was a bylaw in place in Toronto that prohibited pet stores from selling animals other than from rescue groups, shelters, and pounds, the animals were selling anywhere from $1,500 to $4,000 per animal. And with minimal paperwork, you didn't really understand and know where the animals came from. And when we were looking into this through Freedom of Information and other stuff, you find out that these animals are often, if they were coming from the United States, and some of them are coming from other provinces, are put together by what they call bunchers. So people, you know, meet breeders, in quotes, in a parking lot behind a Tim Hortons on the highway and buy puppies. And
wow.
They deliver those puppies to a pet store. And so, you know, you when you have that kind of transaction going on and limited paperwork, I think, frankly, there isn't much you could possibly know about the animal and where that animal came from by the paperwork that's provided by the pet store.
Is buying an animal online any better then? Because isn't there a big danger of thinking you're dealing with a reputable breeder? A lot of breeders online won't even require you to go visit an animal in person. They essentially mail you your new pet. So is that something to be very weary of?
Absolutely. I would be extremely cautious about buying any animal online, really. I think if the person who's wanting to is selling the animal ought to be open to having somebody come to their home, see where the animal is, see how the animal is kept. If this animal is a puppy, to see the parents, how they're kept, what are the circumstances under which this is being bred. And if people won't show you those animals, if people won't let you in the house or the place where the kennel is, don't buy the animal, because you cannot be assured of what actually is, how that puppy came to be. And it's really important, because I mean, I've dealt with people with heartbreaking stories who went and fell in love with an animal and, you know, puppy, took the puppy home. The puppy had all kinds of genetic problems, bills of $5,000 and $10,000, heartbreaking decisions about what to do with these puppies, and people who brought home puppies who had parvovirus that infected their other dogs, and their other dogs died. So you have to be really, really careful about where you purchase puppies and kittens, so that you make sure that once you have done that, that the people that you're purchasing them from have gone through their due diligence to make sure they've been properly vaccinated and vetted and so on and so forth. And, you know, you can't always tell that when you buy them either offline or online or from a commercial operation.
Right. Or I guess from any kind of ad, whether it's in a newspaper or flea markets, there's so many random locations where you might think you're just, you know, helping out and saving one particular animal. But what you're essentially saying is that you need to do some research into whatever animal it is that you're going to be acquiring.
Catherine, I think people, I mean, pet dogs and cats are considered in the industry a commodity. You know, how many can you sell? How many can you breed? And this isn't true of all breeders. So many breeders are ethical in what they do and are very careful about it. My gripe with it is that we have so many dogs and cats in pounds and shelters that we don't need to breed any more animals in order to allow, you know, have people have them in their homes. But what I wanted to say was, these are living sentient beings that require somebody who decides to take an animal into their home to commit to the lifetime of that animal. And it's a big decision to make. And, you know, I'm afraid in many cases where we throw things away, you know, we don't have to, you know, recycle and all that sort of stuff. And the same thing spills over to acquiring pets. If they don't fit into your life, you get rid of them. You put them on Kijiji and hope somebody else comes and takes the animal off your hands.
Liz, are kitten mills as popular, do those exist in our country the way that puppy mills exist, or is it different for cats?
Well, there are cat breeders. I have a little kitten cat that we rescued. She was in a kitten producing operation till she was 9. So they are around, but the cat population of animals, cats that are not wanted, cats end up in shelters, cats end up ultimately as feral cats on the street, is not so much from cat breeding as it is from people's failure to actually spay and neuter their animals, keep their animals indoors, and not allow their animals to reproduce. And cats, you know, we've reached that point largely with dogs. When I started in this business, people spend most of their time collecting dogs off the street. And, you know, dogs are running at large in many, many communities. And,
wow.
And years and years of bylaws has finally resulted in much more responsible pet ownership in in dogs.
You're right. Actually, that reminds me of my mom telling me when I was young, our dog was never leashed. And my mom said there really was no such thing at the time. You just put your dog, the dog was outside on the lawn, and then you'd open the door, the dog would come in. So it's funny because in my lifetime, I don't remember that. But it's interesting how much things have changed.
I mean, lots of people in the old days, shall we say, used to open up their door and the dog went out and they'd, you know, get washed and dressed and have breakfast and then the dog would come in for the day. So, you know, nobody walked. You didn't often walk your dog. Your dog just went out and did his or her thing and then came back. And that's fundamentally changed for the better, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
We've you know, started to be much more serious about cat bylaws, about spay and neuter, about a whole bunch of work on trap, neuter, return, and manage colonies of feral cats to try and reduce the cats out on the street and the kittens that are produced. And so we're beginning to see some effects in some shelters where this is actually taking place. So I think we're going to begin to see a change also with the cats. But at the moment, you know, dogs are less problematic in shelters because there are not so many of them now, but cats are clearly are still, there's too many of, you know, just too many of them for shelters to provide adequate care and length of time that might need to be adopted.
Can you describe the scale of the puppy mill problem? Like, do you have any kind of estimate of what kinds of numbers we're talking about? And could you maybe just run me through for anybody listening who isn't familiar with an actual puppy mill, what those conditions are like for the animals?
It very much depends on who's raising the animals and where they're being raised. But we started out looking at the American situation because the puppies were coming from puppy mills in the United States. And so the situation was varied there, but generally horrible circumstances for the parent animals because mostly they're kept in cages and bred over and over and over again. There is no proper record keeping, so some animals are bred brother and sister, you know, that
awful
inappropriate breeding, which produces animals that often have serious genetic illnesses like hip dysplasia, knee issues, a whole variety of different genetic problems that occur. And now we're finding, we went through a whole big fight and actually got the Canadian government to agree to prohibit puppies with either genetic deformities or illnesses they were prohibited from coming into Canada. And that resulted in a huge decline in the number of puppies that were coming in.
That's amazing.
But the problem was we couldn't get anybody in the provinces to actually prohibit puppy mills. And so, you know, the market having a vacuum replaced. So, you know, puppies come from Quebec. There's breeders in Ontario, and they're in exactly the same situation. Animals kept in tiny cages, often in the dark, bred inappropriately, inappropriate records, little veterinary care, you know, all that sort of stuff.
And I was reading when I was doing some research to talk to you today that often the females, after they can no longer breed anymore, or I guess they're just euthanized.
Yes, they probably shot. You know, I suspect that they're not going to pay to have a veterinarian come in to, you know.
Horrible.
Humane euthanasia. So it's unclear because these places are not regularly inspected by anybody. So whatever goes on behind closed doors, nobody really knows unless, you know, somebody can get into a barn and see what the conditions are actually like.
Why is it so difficult to get the provincial governments to ban puppy mills?
Well, it's a tough fight because
it seems like it would be a no-brainer.
Governments are inclined not to interfere with businesses, people's ability to make money. And I think that spills over to the puppy mill operations. Often the puppy mills are just another agriculture animal. So in many circumstances, and some of the ones that have been investigated over the last few years, they've been part of a barn of animals, and some of them are dogs that are producing and they're selling puppies. So as opposed to pigs or calves or whatever else. And so, you know, there isn't a clear delineation about what these people do. So they're an agricultural animal, even though in law they're not considered that. That's how the individuals, and we all know that there are no on-farm inspections by the government to make sure that the animals are being properly cared for. And of course, we're having this debate now about who's going to do animal welfare law enforcement in Ontario. And that's clearly up for debate.
And obviously, this would apply, I'm assuming, Liz, to other species at pet stores, excluding exotics, but things like rabbits. I'm assuming your advice is the same. If somebody, you know, is set on having an animal like a rabbit as a pet, they can go to a local shelter and rescue one.
Yes, in fact, we're looking into Toronto City Council to actually ban the sale of rabbits in Toronto as well. Rabbits, unless you're a very committed rabbit parent, rabbits are very hard to care for properly, and they require a lot of work, and people buy them when they look cute, as they do with puppies, a very similar thing. And when they get big and more difficult to manage, they tend to sometimes dump them out into the environment and sometimes take them to a shelter. And we've dealt extensively with feral rabbits in Kelowna and in Victoria and other places where, you know, it's a much milder climate during the wintertime, and rabbits are able to survive, and of course they reproduce. So in a similar way as feral cats, we have situations with rabbits as well. That's not so much here in Ontario where the weather is much colder. Rabbits tend not to survive. But even in shelters, if you talk to any shelter that has rabbits there, they're extremely difficult to find homes for. And so we're recommending maybe not have a rabbit as a pet. If you want to rescue a rabbit, if you're really committed, you want to rescue a rabbit, go to a pound. Don't buy a rabbit from a pet store.
Is there a place where a person can go to find a comprehensive list of shelters and rescue facilities in their area?
Probably not. You just have to, if you have a humane society or if you have a pet store that has displays and dogs and cats from a rescue group, I would go and talk to the pet store and see who the rescue groups are. And once you've contacted one, you're likely to find out that there are others in the community. Often the rescue groups have Facebook pages and so on where they actually show the animals that they have for adoption, but you pretty much have to do your own kind of research in that regard. Mm-hmm. Comprehensive list.
Is it still possible to adopt directly from the OSPCA if you're in Ontario or an SPCA?
Oh yes, the OSPCA in Newmarket has a brand new facility that shows dogs and cats there. That, as is typical, they have more cats than dogs. That's typical in most shelters now. But yes, you can adopt from a SPCA in your area. For example, there's different ways in the city of Markham, because the OSPCA has the contract there to do animal control. And because Newmarket is a fair distance from Markham to actually go and adopt an animal, they've opened up a pet adoption center in one of the community centers, and it's become hugely popular for people to go and volunteer to groom the animals and all sorts of things, and also to adopt them. In fact, you know, there are barely any cats to be had because this adoption center has been so successful, and it's because it's like everything else, you know, there's people who are coming into the community center for all sorts of reasons. And they're exposed to this idea that you don't have to have a kitten. You can go and take home an adult cat and fall just as much in love with that animal and spend wonderful time with that animal. And that's what this adoption center has sold. It's been a real success.
Oh, that's amazing. While I have you here, can you just speak a bit about why it's important to microchip or tag your pet? And can you tell us a bit about what can happen to a lost pet?
Sure. What we recommend, microchipping for sure, because it's a permanent thing, whereas a tag is not, and often a tattoo is, there's no place to go to figure out what that number actually means. So a microchip is really important. But the key to the microchip is you have to keep the information up to date. That's the downfall of that system, because many people move and forget to update the microchip. So when, for example, when we adopt it through Project Jesse Animals Out, we say we have both names on the form, so that if the animal is lost and the person who adopted the animal moved, they can contact us to make sure that that animal doesn't go anywhere but back into to the rescue. So it would be important if you adopt from a rescue group to actually include both of those in, because one is probably maybe a bit more stable in the long term in terms of not moving and changing information. The concern with not identifying your pet and not keeping your pet up, information up to date, is that even if you keep your cats indoors and you keep your dogs on a leash, accidents happen and animals get out accidentally. Dogs will slip their collar maybe and run away. For whatever reason, accidents happen and often animals are lost. And the concern is that in Ontario, we have a thing called the Animals for Research Act. And if the animal, if your animal gets picked up and brought to a pound or a shelter and has no identification, it's possible that your animal could be sold to research and you could never actually find out what happened.
Unbelievable.
The information through is to protect the research facility that has acquired your pet, so that it's very, very difficult to actually get proper information if your animal ended up in the pound. And of course, we had that situation quite a number of years ago now with a dog named Royal, who was 13 years old, golden retriever, a collar with his name on it. He'd been to the groomer. He had hot spots that were being treated. He was, you know, clearly a loved and identified dog. He ended up being lost. He wandered off the property. Somebody picked him up, took him to the, had the pound keeper pick him up, and the pound keeper sold him to research. The day he arrived at the pound and the
So even an elderly golden retriever can end up with that fate.
Well, in the research facility, he walked off the truck. The research facility took one look at him and said he's too old and killed him. So
horrible.
It took a huge amount of effort outside to force the Ontario Ministry and others to actually reveal what happened to Royal. So it's a very sad story that I'm afraid is repeated often in Ontario, because we think that there's about 4,700 pet dogs and cats that are sold to research every year.
If people want to get more involved with the No Pets in Research campaign that you guys have going, is there something that they can do specifically?
Go to the website, nopetsinresearch.ca. And there's tons of information there. There's letters to sign, all sorts of different things. So, and of course, if you have any more questions or concerns, just give me a call.
Liz, thank you so much for talking to me today and for all that you do on behalf of animals.
Thank you. Glad you're doing this.